Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, again, a good few bits of rugby news on the agenda to work through this week, but we'll start with Jerry Flannery and his move to Quinns. I know that we had heard it on the grapevine, the two of us, but didn't dip our toe into the water of speculation. We were planning roads and routes to see where would be his closest club. London Irish and Quinns came in under the radar, but we were jumping on the London Irish bandwagon. But it's Quinns that are the destination for Jerry Flannery as the line-out coach, and fair play to him. It's great to see Irish coaches, when it doesn't work out at a province or when they leave a province, to go on to other coaching jobs. I think too many times it can be hard for them to get jobs once they come out of a provincial setup, but this guy has a world of rugby knowledge, and you know, it can only be a good thing for Quinns and for Jerry Flannery.
Oh yeah, look, fabulous appointment by Harlequins. Great recruitment. Flannery is a really, really good coach, and you know, when he's going in there as a line-out coach, I think you got a kind of a small glimpse of the stuff that Flannery knows when it comes to coaching that aspect of the game on social media during the lockdown when he was doing his throwing videos. I think it's a move that'll really, really suit him, and you know, will be a massive success for both Harlequins and himself.
Yeah, it certainly will. I suppose, Tom, the move over to England and the move abroad for Irish coaches, it's a big step and a big move, isn't it? It's not, you know, I think especially for players who've grown up within the Munster system and then gone on to coach within the Munster system, it's almost as if like that's all you know. It is a quite a leap to then just up sticks and take a punt. I know it's only England, but still.
Yeah, oh yeah, but look, it's a massive change in environment. You know, I know literally and you know, metaphorically, you know, but it comes down to, you know, being willing to test yourself in a completely new environment and bring the qualities that you have from, you know, from coaching and playing at Munster and being involved there, and all the learning experiences that Jerry Flannery would have had there as well. You know, like as in when he was at Munster, came through a kind of a difficult first couple of seasons, you know, when results weren't great, and then really, really turned it around under Razzie, and you know, is a really experienced guy now. You know, and it's like when you think about the guy that Quinns are actually getting now as a, not only just as a forward, you know, a guy to do, you know, line out work with the forwards, but as a guy who's been through big days with Munster and the European Cup, but bad days as well in the early goings, that there's a whole load of experience there that really, it's so difficult to get to be involved in that pressurised environment that Jerry Flannery was involved in at Munster for years. You know, to go now, it really is it's a great move for Harlequins, and I think that it's about as good as a recruitment as you could get if you're looking to kind of shore up that area of your game.
Yeah, absolutely, and we wish him the very best in the new move and the new role. Tom, we spoke a few weeks back about possible ways that the season would be wound up or ended and that we couldn't see how it would be played. Obviously, of course, we're looking at across jurisdictions between South Africa, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. You know, there's a lot of stuff to be considered, a lot of moving parts in this. You also have the European competitions, the possibility of the Six Nations going to home and away, the fact that the Six Nations really do need to get their season finished for the TV revenue, and the mention of the Lions test against South Africa being moved to October. So I think going back at the start of this, we had mentioned as well that you did an article on it, it would offer a perfect opportunity for World Rugby to reset the rugby calendar. They'd never have as good an excuse or as good an opportunity to do it. What do you think the new, I suppose, firstly, how can you see the seasons being resolved? And secondly, what's the new rugby calendar going to look like? And I'm going to give you time to get your crystal ball out of the cupboard before you answer that.
Rub my own head and see if something comes out. No, well, when you look at what we have in World Rugby right now, it is a crisis, and it is an opportunity to reset and to do the business that, you know, you would have thought could never have been done in years gone by. Like, you look at changing around the calendar, being willing to move to Six Nations, as we saw reported a couple of weeks back, as something that now the Six Nations was looking at, you know, that they were open to it at least. When you look at that, you look at a sport that is now trying to get its house in order with regards to making sure everybody's kind of playing and working off the same script, so we can get Test Nations playing each other in big games at a similar stage in each other's seasons. Because I think for too long we've seen, you know, summer tours going down to, you know, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, and you know they're in the mid at the start of their season. The European teams are at the tail end of theirs. So again, it's difficult to see those games sometimes because you know one side is very tired, the other side is quite fresh but not as you know not as as hardened, you would say, and it ends up being quite you know less of a spectacle than what it could be. I think when people are looking at syncing up the calendars, it's with that in mind, is to make so everything just kind of I think flow a little bit easier. And I think when you look at the calendar overall too, I think you're seeing a lot of the complaints that people have is that. You know, especially for you know for we'll say provincial level rugby like you know Pro 14 and then the Gallagher Premiership and so on, that the rugby that happens during the test windows isn't as popular with people because the big players are obviously playing for their country. That's something again I think that people are going that we're going to see now we're going to see a lot less of. I think we're going to want to have as much because ultimately it comes down to revenue. What will draw the biggest crowds? What will draw the you know or put together the biggest games? And I think that's the ones where you're seeing more of your big players playing in all of the games, maybe less games, but ones that guarantee bigger gates and you know bigger TV money, and I think higher stakes and more I suppose drama involved in those games will be what will get people back in through the gates watching on TV and getting people paid you know the TV money that we want and need to drive the game going forward.
Tom, I suppose, how do you see the Pro 14, the regular season, being wound up this year? I mean, there are regular season games that have to be played, the knockouts. I mean, could it be that they might just turn around and say, look, the placings are as they are, and we just go straight to playoffs? I mean, it's not great, but it would at least we'd be able to put a line through the season and say it was played and here are the winners.
Yeah, I mean, like, I suppose if you were to go fair is fair and just go on league standings, you would just say that Leinster won it, you know, because they were so far ahead of everybody else point-wise. But when you look at, you know, how you finish off the season, I think that's there's two parts to it. There's who wins the trophy and what are the seedings for the Champions Cup? How is that going to work? How are people going to go, like, as in how will they decide who plays where and, you know, goes into what seeding or whatever else? That is still a problem in France. We don't know what's going on there. Last I heard, there was talking about 8 French teams going in there this year. Maybe that'll be expanded back up to a 24-team tournament for this season.
It should have been left at a 24-team tournament, in my opinion.
I think it should, because I think it gave the tournament a little bit more room to breathe. And it kind of, you know, I think that you can have too many clashes between the big teams too early in the tournament. And I think that hurt it a small bit. But when you look at how the Pro 14 is going to finish, I think you may see internal country games, you know, where the Italian sides play each other, the South African teams, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and they come to some arrangement where maybe as they progress through, like we'll say you maybe play 3 South African game or Scottish games, for example, where Edinburgh and Glasgow play each other, you know, in a 3-game series and see who comes out on top of that. Then maybe the winner of that, if it's possible for travel to happen then, you know, over the course of, we'll say, a month after all these games start, then you might look at, well, the winner of that goes to play the winner of the Ireland series, and then the winner of the Italian series plays. The Welsh, you know, it could work something a bit like that. But again, it's kind of hard to know how you take into account everything that had come before in the season and whether you can completely separate your seeding for the Champions Cup from who actually wins the Pro 14 2019-20, because I think that those things may end up being two very different things, given how they're, you know, the practicalities of how you have to actually play. You know, I think what might suit, I mean, again, this is just my own idea on it, was just like that you would just, for this year, you would have, you know, a Scottish champion, a Welsh champion, an Italian champion, an Ireland champion, and a South African winner, and that, you know, they would win the little kind of mini kind of provincial tournaments that are there. It would mainly suit the Irish provinces because, you know, we would have 4 teams so that you've got a kind of an inter-pro series. But it's so complicated because, like, you look over in England now and the UK rather, and look at how, you know, things seem to be going there with the coronavirus. It's a bit behind what we have over here at the moment, and a bit behind Italy as well. Italy is kind of slowly recovering. South Africa, there's a bit of question marks there as to how that's developing. So, like, there's a lot of moving parts to this, like, and it's like, if it's very difficult for you to say, well, we'll be able to make we for certain will have Welsh sides able to travel over to Ireland in, you know, by the time October, you know, September rolls around. Like, it's unlikely. Do you know what I mean? Or if it is or it isn't, anything could change, and all of a sudden, then all your plans are gone. So I think it could be a thing where we're just looking at the way the season finished points-wise is maybe how it'll be seeded for the Champions Cup. And then you just have a couple of, you know, inter-country series to kind of determine, you know, who wins a certain block of you know of the tournament or whatever else, and just try and just write it off that way. But you still get a series of 2019-20 games that you can give to Premier Sports, give to Air Sports, and go, look, well, here's our, you know, here's our product, and finish off the season that way.
Yeah, I suppose Europe would be an easier prospect, but you mentioned off air, of course, that puts Saracens in a bit of a predicament because a lot of their guys have moved on now and are out of contract.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at Saracens, and they are, you know, projected to lose on the 1st of July. They've got Nick Azikiwe going to Northampton. They're losing Will Skelton. They're losing, God, a lot of players. Matt Gallagher is coming to Munster, and then you've got a lot of guys. Then, like, they'll still be a formidable side, but they're very much in a kind of contracting space now, where they're kind of trimming their belt a little bit, because, you know, they've obviously got a lot of guys who want to be playing top level rugby rather than championship rugby. So they're going off on loan deals. You know, the likes of Lazowski is heading off on loan.
Yeah, and
So
the salary cap for the UK clubs has come down again this week, Tom.
it has, yeah. I mean, that is a needed thing. I think when you look at the English clubs, I think it was always a little bit too high. I understand the thinking behind it, because they figure, like, well, if we've got a high salary cap, we can then afford to bring in top players, and those big players will drive interest in the league and drive interest in the games and make us more competitive in Europe. Because if you listen to a lot of people complaining in the aftermath of this coming down, what they're saying is, how are we going to compete in the Champions Cup now? Because, you know, the French teams will always be able to have certain big players. The Irish provinces, you know, have had big players historically. Although, you know, when I've been looking back over the course of the last number of years for an article series I'm writing, from around 2012 on, the Irish provinces really didn't sign a whole lot of big marquee names from abroad. I mean, look at Snéamann and D'Lende are probably the biggest signings to come to the Irish provinces, God, I think since Charles Peatow and Marcel Coetzee went to Ulster. John Afoa, maybe. There really hasn't been a whole load. And I think that has, you know, like, it's forced the Irish provinces to have to make, you know, work their resources a bit differently. But I think because there's so many of the Premiership clubs, and it's so difficult to compete and to pay, you know, to even get up to the top of that £7 million limit, I think that it could be a good thing in the long term for them, but only if they commit to it. But you've already seen, on, you know, there's a number of loopholes where if guys are contracted through a certain time, that they, you know, 75% of their full wages will only be counted towards the cap, because obviously they're under contract. So there's ways around it, and I think the likes of Bristol and eventually Saracens, when they come back up, will be, you know, they'll be looking to try and operate a kind of a different scheme. But I think we're at a point where, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes, and a lot of, you know, a lot of, you know, we've seen a lot of fuss already, where the English clubs and the English players are saying that, look, we are not going to have our contracts just cut arbitrarily to fit under this wage cap. Because again, you look at it, they've got bills, they've got, you know, car loans, they've got mortgages that they signed under a certain amount. And if now they're saying we're going to drop our wages by, you know, 30% or whatever else, you know, there's no real way for you to handle that.
Yeah, absolutely not, Tom. The prospect of an October Lions and a home and away Six Nations.
Yeah.
More work for you.
Yeah, more work, yeah. But, like, you look at the home and away Six Nations, I think that's just going to be the case now, where if it's unlikely to see Australia, New Zealand, and even South African test sides coming up to the Northern Hemisphere over the course of the next couple of months, then a home and away Six Nations that you play out over the course of, you know, the test window, and then again next year, spring. It makes sense, you know. It'll get, you know, home and away would get good revenue going if you can get people into the stadiums. That'll be badly needed. People will certainly watch it. As for a Lions tour, I think if they're looking to sync up the calendars, then it's inevitable. It's kind of inevitable we're going to see, Lions tours happening in October going forward. So it's one of those things that I think it would be successful whenever it would happen, because I think the Lions is one of the biggest drivers of the game. But one of the big questions is that if there's a kind of a shift in the calendars, does this mean that there's going to be more summer rugby? And there's been kind of a question, like, as in, like, what do you think summer rugby is actually like? Would that be something that would you be into summer rugby?
Yeah, well, the only problem that would pose for me is it would clash with the GAA coverage.
And that's the problem.
It'd be a clash from a coverage point of view more than anything else. I think at the levels of rugby, AIL, and stuff that we're talking about, I don't think it would have that much of a drain players wise, but I think resources wise for media, resources wise for just people trying to cover it, it could pose problems. And you're also going up against audiences, basically. So if your summer rugby audiences are going up against GAA audiences, be it Munster finals, Leinster finals, you're dipping your toe into a different market. I mean, if you think of it, they pretty much have the bar the English Premier League, rugby has its own has a free run at it between September and kind of January, February each year.
Yeah, I mean, I know soccer is played during that time anyway, but that's not really a draw for in-stadium audiences in Ireland, at least. Like, you can imagine if there's a Leinster final, or sorry, a Munster final between Limerick and Cork in the hurling on the same day as a Pro 14 game in Thomond Park. You can imagine the like, as in, it would just be impossible. Like, that would be only my issue. Like, summer rugby is, sounds grand, like, but in Ireland, at least, I think it would cause, because again, down here, it, same as I know it, like, that a lot of Munster rugby fans are also big GAA fans. Like, there's no, like, because you can kind of split the two. That might not be the case elsewhere, maybe not up in Ulster, maybe to a certain audience in Leinster, maybe not. But, like, you look at, it's certainly the case down here where there's been, like, where big GAA games, especially as you kind of head towards, you can imagine like Munster final, All Ireland series and stuff like that.
I'll even give you an example of that this week. We did a podcast on 50 years of Brough rugby, and the Brough jersey is yellow and maroon. It's a very strange combination. And I remember I was asking Willie Conway this week, how did they come across, or where did they come across yellow and maroon as their color combinations for the jersey? And he was saying that obviously Brough Rugby Club draw their members from Atlaca GAA, Kilmallock GAA, Brough GAA. And he was like, Brough GAA were red and white, Atlaca were black and white, Kilmallock were green and white, such another club were this color and that color. He says that the rugby jersey had to be of a color that had nothing to do with any of the local GAA clubs. So there's just your, that's your microcosm of how the two can exist in the same locality. How they coexist, especially in rural parts of Cork and Limerick. And I don't think that is as big an issue, in certainly not in Ulster, and probably not in Leinster either.
Yeah, I mean, like, as in, look, I could be completely wrong, but just kind of, it just anecdotally feels like that there's not a huge crossover between Leinster rugby fans and Dublin GAA fans, for example. But, like, for here, like, just the other day, I was walking down, like, through the local GAA pitches here, and you'd see two lads pucking a, pucking a ball around, both of them wearing either, like, one of them was wearing a Munster recent European tracksuit, the other guy was wearing a literal Munster jersey. So it's like there's a big crossover there, and I think that would actually be a big, that could be a big clash,
You know,
especially.
there's like a Garda confidential line you can call for that if you see instances. I'm not sure, the GAA have it up on their website. If you see any cross code or foreign game memorabilia, jerseys or implements on their fields that you can call.
The squad from
We'll
HQ will
give the number. We'll give the number at the end of the show.
But yeah, so it like I think it would actually, it would be a big problem. I think in Ireland it would cause a bit of a clash of audiences to a certain extent. As for kind of, that it would make for more attractive rugby and stuff like that, I'm yet to be convinced that attractive rugby is actually what draws people to the game when
I
it comes
think
to.
it's the rivalries. I mean, look, how many attractive Munster Leinster Interpro games have you seen?
With massive flowing rugby, not really a whole load.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's the same argument that's been put forward for the IRFU's plans for the domestic game, which they released today, and the idea that I think what they said in the statement was that they would, it when possible, that the early games, the games in the early part of the season, would be kept local to minimise travel. Now, reading into that and to some of the kind of the word from the clubs is that we might be looking at a regional structure or a conference structure up to a certain point, and then maybe with a crossover for the end of season playoffs. And I think that is a sustainable way forward for club rugby. I think, you know, there was mentions of two divisions in Munster, Division 1, Division 2 in Munster. Division 1 would go forward to the All-Ireland playoffs, and there would be relegation and promotion between the senior clubs of Division 1 and 2. Again, I think you'd probably be able to roll that out in Leinster and Ulster as well. I don't know, you might look at putting some of the Connacht clubs in at Munster. I don't know that they'd have enough senior clubs to sustain that. Maybe one division if you put Buccaneers in there. So look, it's definitely a common sense approach. It's definitely an approach that I think clubs want to see. Like, you know, speaking with some of the clubs here, not too keen on Friday night, on leaving Limerick at Friday night to go up to Belfast for a game on Saturday and not getting down till the early hours of Sunday morning. It just makes it easier for them to attract players as well, especially guys with part-time jobs, that they don't have to give up their entire weekend to play AIL rugby. If that's done on a regional basis, plus you also have the local rivalries, you know, Conn, UCC, Garryowen, Munsters, all in the same pools, playing each other week in, week out. I think that's what people want to see. I'm not saying that the AIL hasn't been good and that you've got to see other clubs and travel the country and all that, but I think we're at a stage now where you can still have that at the end of season and have your trips up to Dungannon. But for now, maybe the regional approach will be certainly better for the gates, but I think it'll be better for the competition.
I'd agree. Like, when it comes down to it, like, you need rugby to be fun, and you need it to be in a case where it's easy to play. And like you said there, like, for a lad who might be working during the week and, you know, rocks up on a Friday bus trip up, you know, that might take him, you know, like it might take you what, like 3 or 4 hours to get anywhere. Like, if you're looking to go like to Dublin from Cork, like if you've got a trip up there, like, you're definitely going to be there overnight. And you're going to, like I say, it's difficult to get yourself up to go play for those games, and lads would fall out. I think going more local rivalries, more local games, keep it within a certain structure, that to me makes a whole lot of sense, because I think that's what people want to see. They want to see, like, the Limerick sides playing each other. They want to see Limerick versus Cork. They want to see, you know, Cork teams playing each other. Like, that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And it would, I think it would actually benefit the game going forward. So, like, I think it's a great idea from the IRFU there, like, keeping things local. And going forward, I think it's actually the way, like, it would actually make sense for the game long term here. But, you know, on the other hand, then you see with the weather, you know, summer rugby, there's less chance of, you know, games being massively affected by the weather and audiences being affected by the weather. We've seen that a few times this season as well, where, you know, there's been, you know, games being played either during a storm event or right before it or right after it, and it's affected gates and it's affected travel, especially for Munster. Because if you're looking at, you know, what the, you know, those storms we've had, a 2-hour drive from Cork up to Limerick and then back again in that weather is difficult. And it's the same from Limerick down to Cork if there's a game on in Musgrave Park. You know, it's complicated. And whatever you choose, there's going to be some issue somewhere. But I think whatever happens, I think it just needs to be synced up more. And I think you need more, both at a club level and a provincial level, more local games, inter-provincial games like that, I think, and more, you know, local games within the province. I think that's going to suit it going forward.
Yeah, it certainly is. Tom, the arrivals to Munster Rugby have been settling in. I saw you with a tweet during the week of the Antonov bringing in RG Snaiman to Shannon Airport. I think he was lying down flat and in separate parts, and he was assembled outside in Shannon and then shipped into Limerick. There's also been some academy signings as well.
Oh, there have, yeah. I think RG was complaining about the leg room on the Antonov, that it was a bit cramped for him. I get it. He's a big guy. But when you look at those guys who Munster brought in, I think they're probably up there with some of the most exciting signings in European rugby, really. You know, Damien Delende and RG Snaiman are top players, and they've guys who've got huge reputations. And I hope we can get back to proper big crowds coming back in again, because I think that those are two fellas who they will draw a crowd, you know. And when you look at the guys like Roman Salanoa, who's also in the neighborhood now, Matt Gallagher coming in soon enough too. Look, I think that those fellas will immediately come in and be close to competing for the Munster senior squad. You know, they've got that ability. Academy wise, Munster have gone with a small intake for the moment. There's other names, you know, maybe and will be added in during the year. But the fellas who they brought in, I mean, Jack Crowley, Scott Buckley and Alex Kendellan, you know, Jack Crowley we saw in the Ireland Under 20s is a really, really good player. Scott Buckley suffered a hamstring injury. He could have been involved in that Ireland Under 20 squad as well. And then you look at Alex Kendellan, who's a fellow who's so highly rated. You know, when I've watched him there recently playing for Prez, he looks like a fellow who's got the physique to really make a very, very quick step up to pro rugby. Really, really exciting player. All of them are guys who got really, really high potential. So it's good to see him. It's good to see those guys coming in. And today, I think, was that Sean O'Connor and I think Kieran Parker are both going to Jersey Rugby over in the championship as well. So it's good to see those guys getting themselves new gigs.
Certainly is, Tom. Tom, that's pretty much where we're going to leave it. But before we go, what are you doing on the Three Red Kings Patreon page and how can people access it?
Yeah, well, look, on patreon.com/3redkings, for as little as €2 a month, but for as much as €10 a month if you want, I am doing a number of different things. I've got my Derailing the Big East series, which is coming up to the conclusion to it pretty soon. I'm also looking at the Super Rugby that's coming up at the weekend in New Zealand. And I'm going to be covering those games with regards to, you know, breaking down some of the technical bits and pieces that have come into the game that we can see. So that's going to be interesting as well. I'm also looking at Toulouse over the course of the last couple of days. I had a look at what their attacking structure is like and how they've used, you know, their size and weight they've recruited over the last couple of years to play into, you know, what is some of the most expansive attacking rugby in Europe. So that's on patreon.com/Kings for as little as €2 a month.